Hey, my thanks to Damian and Ken for hanging around for a little bit. I'm with you until 7. I hope you are on your way to a fabulous, fabulous weekend. We've got a lot of things to talk about. We've obviously got a big series starting in D.C. with the Giants and the Nats. We have got the Olympics opening ceremony tonight. All right, the Olympics are starting. And don't forget about that Team USA against China tomorrow. Make sure you tune in early, because if you miss the first 5 minutes of that game, the game's over. So make sure you do not tune in late. I think that's tomorrow afternoon, if I'm not mistaken. The United States kicking off their Olympic play against China. Just wanted to make sure you had that circled on your calendar for tomorrow. I think it's in the afternoon. All right? I think it's in the afternoon. Anyway, great to be with you, and we are going to be talking about finally, a preseason football game, but more importantly, the Hall of Fame inductions tomorrow in Canton, Ohio. Of course, Brett Favre is getting most of the attention, which is great, and it's not great. I mean, it's really unfortunate. You wait your whole life to get into the Hall of Fame, and now, you know, all anyone knows is that Brett Favre's going into the Hall of Fame. But, I mean, that's the world we live in today. And Brett Favre should be in the Hall of Fame. He deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I'm not sure where I would put him on my all-time list. He wouldn't be in my top five. He would definitely be, probably in my second five, but he would not be in my top five. I don't think he's a top five quarterback of all time. I have always admired his competitiveness, and he lines up every week, but he's not, in my opinion, a top five quarterback, because as many good games as he's had as many bad games, and he's had a lot of horrible games where he's just absolutely thrown the ball up for grabs. And, you know, and I'm not talking about early in his career. I'm talking about, you know, throughout his career. And so that would be the only reason why I would not put him in the top five. But we'll talk about those topics and more. 339-1140. 800-920-1140. I don't know if you've been following this case in New York with Ioannis Cespedes, who is infatuated by golf. And I'm sure that there are everyday players that golf on game days, but I bet you they are few and far between. I bet you very few major league players are golfing on the day of a game. All right? I would say the number would be extremely small, not including pitchers. And it is a bad look. Sandy Alderson, the general manager of the Mets, called it bad optics. You know what it is? It's bad optics and it's lack of common sense. You know, if you're playing in Major League Baseball and the team is paying you $25 million a year, you shouldn't be playing golf on the day of the game. It looks bad. It is bad. And it's just that there's no reason for it. And to make matters worse, you know, and I've never seen Cespedes play, obviously, but I guess he hits the heck out of the ball. I guess he's got tremendous power, which you would imagine, considering how far he hits a baseball. And he's got he's had a quad injury. Are you going to tell me that that does not aggravate your quad? Well, yes, it does. Now, can you play golf and play baseball on the same day? Yes, you can. Okay. Did he get hurt playing golf and that's why he got hurt on the baseball field? No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's a bad look. He's getting paid $25 million to play baseball. Don't be playing golf the day of the game. All right? Can you please stay away from doing that? Can you just please stay away from doing that? So anyway, he is on the disabled list now, and it'll be very interesting to see whether he adheres to the wishes of the New York Mets. Boy, if he doesn't, then we got some real problems, all right? We got some real issues. There's a story that broke recently about 2 hours ago from TMZ. And apparently on Wednesday night, several Team USA members went into a brothel. And for whatever reason, because we live in a society where everyone's got camera phones, There's DeAndre Jordan. There's DeMarcus. There's DeMar DeRozan. And according to the report, possibly three other players went out on town Wednesday night in Rio. You know what? I don't have a problem with it. I really don't. Is it the best decisions? No. A source close to the team tells TMZ that the players got the standard line. They thought it was a spa. They realized it wasn't the right place for them, and they immediately left. Again, the players were only seen hanging at the bar. That's it. So I'm already getting a couple text messages on it, and that's why I brought it up. I don't think it's a big deal. I really don't. I don't think it's a big deal. If you disagree, feel free to call in. But, you know, again, that's what TMZ does. And, you know, I'm getting several tweets on it. I've got several fans texting me. It doesn't bother me. It really doesn't. Somebody said, as a Mets fan, I am disgusted with this outrage. The guy is on the DL but can play golf. We're still in a wild card race here. Bad optics? That's the understatement of the year. Boy, it sure is, isn't it? It sure is. First of all, I hate to break the news to you. I don't mean to disappoint you because I know how great last year was. But you're done. All right? You're eight back. And the Nationals have something like 11 or 12 games left with the Braves. I'm sorry. You're not making up eight games unless you get Daniel Murphy back. And I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. And here's the other issue. You're now not in second place. You're in third place. So, you know, are you in a wild card race? Yes, that's a very good point. And you'll take that right now. You're not going to win the division, but you're right. You need to start looking at the wild card race. But you should be outraged. It's disgraceful. It's absolutely disgraceful. Now, the Mets are only a game back of the wild card. So every game is super important to them. So you're absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. It is, you know, the division races, for the most part, with the exception of the West in the National League, and particularly the American League East, there's not a lot going on. The Mets, thank goodness, have a wild card. The Dodgers, the Marlins, the Cardinals, and the Mets all within a game of each other for the two wild card spots. But anyway, back to Cespedes. I mean, what on earth are you thinking about? And, you know, Kevin Millar. And listen, Kevin Millar is a prankster. He jokes. He's a very effervescent guy. I love Kevin Millar. He's a great guy. Great, great family man. And so he took a picture of Cespedes and put it on his Twitter account. Now, if I'm Cespedes, I'm one of two things is entering my mind here. All right, if I shouldn't be playing golf or if I'm worried about what the fans are going to say, I would say, hey, don't put that out on social media. That's the first thing I would say. Hey, listen, I've had people take pictures, and I mean this, and I'm nobody, and I've said, hey, don't put that out on Twitter. You know, just because I don't want it's. And so I get that. Cespedes is a diva. I think anybody that knows him will tell you that. It's now become a big deal in New York and all the tabloids. Sandy Alderson calling it bad optics. You think? Bad optics. Somebody says they're grown adults. If it's legal, who cares? I'm the same way. It doesn't bother me. I had to respond to it because I'm getting a lot of, you know, I don't want to start a three-hour dialogue on it, and so I'm putting it to rest. Because it's not a big deal to me. It really isn't. Not a big deal to me at all. All right. We'll come right back. Don't forget, Golf Hour at 6 o'clock. The Grant Napier Show, Sports 1140 KHDK. Other big news that has happened in the last 24 hours, and that is Russell Westbrook, who signed the deal to keep him there for two more years. He can opt out in the third year, and I think he will. Basically, he got a $9 million raise. Very interesting to read his comments about loyalty, which to me, without any question, is a direct shot at Kevin Durant. I don't know what the relationship has been like and is like between those two, but it can't be good. It can't be good because if your relationship was good, it would be very simple. You would say, I wish him the very best of luck, blah, blah, and, you know, but it wasn't like that, really. It really wasn't like that. So I like Oklahoma City. I still think they're a really good team. I think that they are going to be right up there contending for the second-best record in the West. I think they made some very good moves in the offseason. And, you know, if I'm looking at that Western Conference, we all know that Golden State is the best team. All right, a guy that was in Oklahoma City for many years as their TV analyst and is now with the Detroit Pistons in the same capacity is Grant Long, and he joins us here on Sports 1140 KHTK. Grant, it's Grant Napier. How are you?
Grant, it's Grant Long. How are you, man? I'm doing pretty good.
You know what? I am doing very well. you know, obviously you're in Detroit now, but you know the situation in Oklahoma City very well. You know that community inside out. I mean, this must be like Christmas in August for that community.
You know what? They had to do something to salvage what they had once Kevin Durant decided that he was going to, you know, depart Oklahoma City. They had to do something, and they had to do something big. And if they weren't going to land a huge free agent, then they had to sew up Russell Westbrook and at least give the fans in Oklahoma the sense that, hey, they've got one guy that they can build around at least, and that's a superstar caliber player. Let's face it, Russell Westbrook, one of the top five players in the NBA.
No question.
And he happens to be playing in Oklahoma City, so that's a great thing for that community.
What did you make of Russell Westbrook's comments? And I'll read part of the excerpt when he said, definitely when I had the opportunity to be able to be loyal to you guys, that's the number one option. Loyalty is something that I stand by. Is that a direct shot to Kevin Durant, in your opinion?
Well, you know what? I think it also confirms what he has and what they've established there in Oklahoma City under Sam Presti and the rest of that organization. Sam is a family-oriented guy. He's been preaching that from day one, trying to keep those guys together. If you can recall early on in both of those guys' career, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, there was a lot of what people thought was animosity between those guys, and it was Sam Presti who got between those guys and said, hey, if you guys are going to be great, if you're going to lead this team or this community, you've got to be able to do it together. So I think both of them bought into that, and then buying into that, it got Russell Westbrook to the point where he said, this is where I want to be. I mean, Sam Presti is backing me. This organization is backing me. It's almost like it was a sense of I owe it to a guy like Sam Presti who's put so much confidence and invested in me.
The one thing that confuses me are when people say, well, gee, they couldn't play together and blah, blah, blah. They went to one NBA Finals. They probably would have been to some more if it were not for bad luck with injuries as we got closer to the postseason and during the regular season, both Durant and Westbrook. I tell people, you know what, here's what I saw. And, again, I don't know what it's like off the court with those two, but here's what I saw. They beat a 67-win team in San Antonio who had only lost one game on their home floor. Then they were up 3-1 against the 73-win defending champion Golden State Warriors. They were on their own floor in Game 6. Say what you want. Kevin Durant did not play well in the fourth quarter, and I think that's the one time that he has to show that he's a true, you know, and again, he is a true superstar, but I mean, I think that's when he has to deliver. He didn't do it, but when you hear people say those two can't play together, what is your reaction? Because I don't understand that.
I don't understand it either, and I tell people because that question has been raised quite a few times, and I say that until Russell Westbrook came to Oklahoma City, Kevin Durant had never led the NBA in scoring. He was there by himself, and he couldn't do it. But the entire time that Russell has been there at the point guard position, Kevin Durant had an opportunity to lead the league in scoring, I believe, with two or three times straight. So with that being said, and he was also the MVP with Russell Westbrook at his point guard position. So to say that those two guys can't play together, I don't buy that. Both guys are alpha guys. They want to be leaders. They want to be the top guy. And I don't think they even have to choose who's going to be 1A and 1B, who's going to be the first fiddle or second fiddle, if you will. Both of those guys understand how to win. Both of them understand that they need each other if they're going to make their team a lot better. I got to tell you this, Grant. I think the biggest issue with that team is that those two superstar players didn't really trust the rest of the guys when it came down to it. They became very predictable in the fourth quarter. It was Kevin going to shoot or Russell going to shoot. None of the other guys really got their opportunities. And I think when you see teams that win, and even LeBron, he gets criticized for passing up shots a lot of times, but he wants to involve all the other guys on the floor. If they can't play, then they shouldn't be on the floor.
Yep.
So he trusts those other four or five guys that he plays with, and I think it makes their team better. I think both Kevin and Russell have to understand, in order to make those guys better, they've got to trust them. They've got to trust them in the crunch.
That's a great point. Grant, the Thunder made a big deal with the Orlando Magic. I love Victor Oladipo. I look at the roster for the Thunder, and yes, they don't have Durant, and we know that the Warriors are the top dog and they got to be caught. But I got to tell you, I could see Oklahoma City battling for second in the conference. Give me your thoughts on that.
I don't know about that one, Grant. I mean, the entire time Russell and Kevin are together, they are a top three team in the Western Conference. I just don't know if they're going to be able to be in that upper echelon in the Western Conference now, because it is obviously Golden State has gotten a lot tougher. They lost a lot by losing a lot of their bench players, but they're still going to be a very, very tough out. The Clippers are always a tough out. They seem to fold down the stretch of the season, but they're always a tough out. You know, you can never count San Antonio.
No, you can't.
There's your top three right there. I don't know if Oklahoma City is going to be better than those guys. So they might be fighting. And who knows what Coach D'Antoni is going to do with the Houston Rockets. They're loaded with talent. I think the right coach can get them to that upper echelon in the Western Conference as well. He may be the coach to be able to do it. So I don't know where Oklahoma is going to fit in the grand scheme of things. I'm not going to say if they'll be fighting for their playoff lives, but I can't put them in that upper echelon Western Conference yet.
Well, you know them better than I do. Let me ask you this before I let you go. We're talking with Grant Long. He's now the analyst with the Detroit Pistons. The Kings acquired Anthony Tolliver. What type of player are they getting?
Well, quality player. Good guy in the locker room, a guy that's kind of knocked down shots on the perimeter. A lot of the intangibles. Every team needs a guy that's going to be able to, when the coach calls him to play, he's going to go in and give you everything he's got. Of course, he's going to make the three-point shot. He's going to play solid defense. He's going to give you everything that he has. I think it's an excellent pickup for the Sacramento Kings.
You talk about, you know, clubhouse guys, you know, guys in the locker room. I use the word professional. You know, this guy appears from everyone I've talked to. He's just a consummate professional. You've played in the league a long time. You've been in the league. You know everything that goes on. I mean, you cannot underestimate the importance of having those type of guys on your team, can you?
Well, it's so vitally important, because he's one of those guys, quite honestly, he could go three games and not even play. But he's going to, and that fourth game that he does play, he's going to give you everything that he has like he's been playing the whole season. So you need guys, because everybody's not going to be satisfied, but you need those guys to keep your locker room together. And he's not afraid to say what needs to be said and not rub anybody the wrong way. So he's got the veteran status that he can come in the locker room and say, hey, do this, do that. This is the way that it's supposed to be done, and everybody should be able to respect that.
Final thought with Stan Van Gundy and the Pistons. I love Andre Drummond. Give me your thoughts on this team with the job that Van Gundy's doing. It seems like they're building a pretty nice roster there.
Yeah, I mean, I've you know, really been a big fan of Coach Van Gundy. He seems to, you know, not pull any punches. He says what needs to be said. I like the way he coaches. Offense is going to be very perimeter-oriented. He's going to try to penetrate, kick out a three-point shot, especially when he has a big guy in the middle like Andre Drummond. Obviously, the elephant in the room is that he has to work on his free throws, but I'm sure that's going to come. And Coach Van Gundy is going to find a way to surround this guy with some players that all of a sudden he doesn't have to be the guy to score every single night. They're going to find ways to score the basketball, and it doesn't necessarily have to include Andre Drummond. I think he's looking more to also make him a very sound defensive player, more like a DeAndre Jordan who can protect the basket and play pick-and-roll defense very well.
And then what do you got? When does winter start? In a couple more weeks up there, buddy?
Yeah, just a couple more weeks, and we'll be breaking out the sweaters.
Yeah, well, you know what? You got away from the tornadoes, and now you got into the real bitter cold weather in the winter. But that's all right. That's where you're from. It's got to be great for you, right?
Oh, yeah, being back home, man. And I've got to tell you this real quick. My mom gets a chance to see me every night of watching the Piston basketball game.
That's awesome.
See me. And she always knew what I did, but didn't really have a good grasp on just how it's done. And this, and she's been into the studio. She's been at the game. It's just been great
to
be back and have her understand exactly what I do. So it's been
that's awesome. That's awesome. Hey, enjoy the rest of your summer. I really appreciate you coming on the show, Grant.
Thanks, Grant. Appreciate you.
All right, take care, man. That's Grant Long. Good stuff right there. If you want to comment on anything he had to say, I think Oklahoma City's a little better than he does, but he knows that team well. He hasn't been there for a year, but I respect his knowledge of the game. I think Oklahoma City's still going to be pretty good. I really do. I think they're going to be pretty good. I think when I look at their roster, I think the emergence of Steven Adams last year, I love Victor Oladipo. There are a lot of things I like about that team. I think they're pretty good. Maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but I like them better than the Clippers. You know, I'm not a fan of the Clippers. When they have to play the best, there's just something missing there. Maybe they're a better regular season team, but they have to prove to me that they can get it done when the postseason starts. They haven't made it out of the second round with that core. That's alarming. And he does make an interesting point about Houston. Going to be very interesting to see how Mike D'Antoni puts that team together and the cohesiveness that they have. Somebody said, just getting in the car, but is there any update on the NBA schedule release? No, there has been no update. I would only tell you that the last 2 years, the schedule has been released on the 12th and the 13th. So what are we on, the 5th? So figure, I would say, if I had to just guess, this is purely a guess, I would say Thursday of next week. And I'm only saying that because, in my experience, they don't do it on Fridays because they televise it live on NBA TV. Now, the other issue is we're in an Olympic year, and they're not going to release the schedule if Team USA is playing. And I don't have the schedule for next week, but they would not release the schedule on at the same time that Team USA is playing or right before or right after because for obvious reasons. So that factor that in, look at the schedule, and that might help you. But again, if I had to guess, I would say next Thursday. That's just, again, that is just throwing a dart at the board. I don't believe that. Well, what is next Thursday? The 11th? So if they waited to Monday or Tuesday, that would be the 15th or the 16th. I think that's too long. I'll stick to Thursday. I'll just say Thursday, but it could be a few days earlier. It could be a few days later, but I'll stick to that. Hey, if you want to call the show, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Again, I think the loyalty comment from Russell Westbrook is directed 100% at Kevin Durant. Does anybody really think that Russell Westbrook believes that stuff? And how bad is Russell Westbrook going to look if he opts out, not if, when he opts out in the third year of his deal and leaves Oklahoma City? All right, if that's the scenario, you know he's going to get destroyed for the loyalty comment. Oklahoma City now has 2 years left, this year and next year, to put a dominant team on the floor. I think they're a lot closer than maybe some others think. I don't think they're that far away from being really, really good. I think they're solid. I love the backcourt, obviously. Steven Adams is really good. They've got some other really good pieces. Still an attractive team to go to because of Westbrook and Oladipo. I mean, I think they can make another impact in free agency next year. Now, you may say, really, Grant, is a free agent going to go to Oklahoma City and sign a 3 or 4 year deal, not knowing whether or not Russell Westbrook's going to be there after that one season? And that's a very good point. You know, that's what Sam Presti's going to have to do. He is going to have to absolutely, you know, convince players to do that. Somebody says, are you going to break down and watch some of the Olympic USA men's team, or are you sticking to your guns and boycotting? I'm not boycotting. That was just in a rant. I'm not boycotting Team USA, but I'm not watching them because it has nothing to do with anything other than I do not enjoy watching non-competitive sports. I don't. And so, like, tomorrow they're playing China. Why would I watch that? Why? I mean, the Team USA could win by, you know, 75 points easily. Why do I want to watch that? Like, where's the essence of sport in that? And that's true of all the teams they're going to play. I honestly feel that there will be no competitive games for Team USA unless they play France, and it could be at least within a 20-point margin. I could at least see that. And possibly Spain. But you know what? I'll tell you what I'm really excited for. I'm excited to see Bogdanović play for Serbia. I'll tell you this. I will watch Serbia play before I watch Team USA play, because I already know what Team USA is going to do. And by the way, I am rooting for Team USA. I hope they win the gold, and I hope the women's team wins the gold. All right, so it's not like I'm anti-Team USA. Of course, I'm rooting for them. But I want to see Bogdanović play. I'm more interested in seeing Serbia play in the Olympics than Team USA, because I already know what Team USA is all about. I already know what they're going to do. I don't know. I've never seen Bogdanovich play. I want to see him play. And how great will it be to watch him play in Olympic competition knowing that he's going to be on the Sacramento Kings next year? And as I told you, when I was in Las Vegas last month, I ran into a general manager and an international scout that I know very well. And they both said if he entered the draft next year, he'd be a top three pick. So I think the Kings are getting themselves a heck of a player. I think they're getting themselves a heck of a player. I think Bogdanovich is somebody that is going to make this team a lot better. Maybe not great, but they're going to make him. It's going to be a better team. You know, the competition that he's playing in Europe is better than any college basketball over here in the United States. So he's getting good experience. It's not NBA experience, but it's certainly better than he'd be getting if he were in college in the United States. So to answer your question in a nutshell, no, I'm not boycotting. That was just part of my rant. But you know what? I will watch Team USA when they get to the gold medal game. I will. I'll give you that. When they get to the gold medal game, I'll watch it. And if I happen to be home and I'm flipping the channels and they're on, I may watch 90 seconds just to see what the score is and the flow of the game. But if I'm flipping the channels and I see Serbia playing, I'm watching that game. And I don't care whether Serbia wins or loses, I'm watching Bogdanovich. So I hope that answers your question. 339-1140, 800-920-1140. Somebody said Yoenis went golfing, then played baseball and got hurt in the game. What's the issue? The issue is that he's had nagging injuries. The issue is that, you know, this is not a injury that 100% happened on the baseball field that night. Okay, that's number one. Number two, it looks bad. Number three, you shouldn't be golfing if you're playing a professional sport on the same day. It's bad. No one else does it. Why the hell does he do it? You know, because he's a diva, because, you know, everything else about Yoenis Cespedes, he can do what he wants whenever he wants. It's wrong. It's flat out wrong. So that's the problem I have. That's the problem I have. Somebody says the Olympics should do away with basketball and bring wrestling back. They ought to do away with golf and bring wrestling back. There's no reason to have golf in the Olympics. I 100% agree with you about wrestling. What a disgrace. Can you imagine if Dan Gable were at Iowa right now as a collegian and there was no Olympics? Are you kidding me or what? That's disgraceful. I totally agree with you. Absolutely 100% agree. They should bring wrestling back. Why wrestling is not an Olympic sport is beyond me. Like, would someone explain that to me? No wrestling in the Olympics, but we have golf. We have tennis. I mean, come on. Does that make any sense? Doesn't make any sense to me. I do not understand that. So good job right there on the text. Bring back wrestling. Never understood that. And by the way, I am not a huge wrestling fan at all. As a matter of fact, I don't really like wrestling. I really don't. And I wouldn't, and I'll tell you this, I wouldn't watch it if I were flipping the channels and I saw wrestling on the Olympics. I've never cared for wrestling. I've never really gotten into it. I actually, you know, listen, I did watch Dan Gable, and so I don't want to, you know, be a hypocrite here, but it's not my cup of tea. You know, two guys rolling around on the mat is not something I can. And that's why I don't like, you know, that's why I'm not that big on, you know, the UFC. I'm not into wrestling. And I, believe me, I appreciate the athletic and the physical sacrifice that wrestlers make. Trust me on that. I get the fact that it is a man's game. I appreciate the fact that these guys are incredible athletes that make incredible sacrifices to make their weight. I'm all for you there. It's just not my thing. I just don't really enjoy watching wrestling. But you are 100% correct. All right? 100% correct. Wrestling needs to be in the Olympics. Somebody said it is in the Olympics. I don't think so. They got rid of it. What was it? How many games ago? I don't think wrestling is back in the Olympics. Is it the Roman Greco wrestling might be in the Olympics? But I don't think the regular. I don't think so. All right, if you want to call the show, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. We're with you up until Oakland A's baseball. The Giants starting a big series in Washington, and they're already trailing 2-0 in the first. I'll tell you this, the Giants could very well be a team in complete free fall at the end of this trip. They could very easily be a team in complete free fall if they have a bad series in Washington and a bad series in Miami. And by bad series, I mean if they go 1-2 and 1-2. That would be a disastrous trip on the heels of the last trip that was a disaster. Is this a hiccup or is there more to it with this team? That's my question. Somebody said wrestling is coming back in 2020. I hope you're right. It needs to be back. It should have never left. Thank you for that text. It should have never left. Wrestling should have never, ever left the Olympics. It's disgraceful. We'll be right back. Grant Napier with you. 339-1140. 800-920-1140. I had a very interesting chat with John Smoltz this morning when I was hosting the Jim Rome show. And I'm going to replay that in a little bit because we talked a lot about Cespedes and we talked a lot about the Giants and some other teams. So we'll do that in a little bit. If you want to get in, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. You know, that text message about wrestling just got me thinking. What sports do you think are in the Olympics that are ridiculous? No way that they should be in the Olympics. And what sports do you feel get screwed by not being in the Olympics? I mean, would someone please explain to me how we can have badminton in the Olympics but not wrestling? Like, would you please explain that to me? I mean, how on earth can you have table tennis, badminton, and not have wrestling? And listen, I'm not ripping badminton and wrestling. I mean, and table tennis. I'm just asking the question. I mean, that makes zero sense to me. Absolutely zero sense. Especially with the tradition of a sport like wrestling. And I'm glad to see that it's coming back in 4 years. It should. It absolutely should be coming back. And it should have never left. And again, I am not a wrestling fan, but I appreciate what a great sport it is. It's just not my cup of tea. It's just not my thing. But I respect wrestlers. I appreciate what they go through. And it is a man's game. All right? I will tell you that. All right, let's get to Brian. You're on with Grant Napier. Hi, Brian.
Hey, Grant. I just wanted to clear it up. Yeah, wrestling is in the Olympics this year. It starts on the 14th, both Greco and freestyle. Jordan Burroughs is number one wrestler in the world. He's looking to get his second consecutive gold medal. So, yes, it is back.
All right, so it is back because I got a text saying it was coming back in 2020. So it is completely 100% back this year?
Yep, 100%. Jordan right. Burroughs is number one. He's American going for his second consecutive gold.
Awesome. Let me ask you this. I mean, why do you think that wrestling got taken out of the Olympics for a period of time? That never made any sense to me.
I think it's just because of the overall support of the sport itself, kind of like why it got lost out of many of the Division I colleges throughout the country. So
wait a minute. Have a lot of Division I programs, have they eliminated wrestling from their sports curriculum?
Yes.
Well, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's still, you know, across the country, and, you know, you have your Penn States and your Iowas and your Iowa States and so forth and stuff. But, you know, especially here in California, you know, UC Davis had to cut their program.
Yeah, I know that. Because I remember when Uriah Faber, I remember when they were, talking about it. And I remember Uriah talking about, you know, how bad that was. And so, yes, I was aware of that. But I wasn't aware that it was, I don't want to say nationwide, but I wasn't aware that it was a trend.
Yeah, a lot of schools did have to cut their program over the years. And I think it just comes down to, you know, it's a smaller sport. It's, not as, you know, as popular as some of the other ones. And so, I remember going back as far as when Stephen Neal was in Bakersfield and he had to fight to keep the program alive at UC Bakersfield when he was going for his national championship and stuff. So.
You know what's amazing to me? And again, I'm obviously, this doesn't pertain to when I was in school. But when I remember being in high school and all my buddies wrestled that played football. If they weren't playing basketball, they wrestled. And it's like, you know, all the schools in high school wrestled, and it was like a big deal. And then, you know, remember, obviously, Dan Gable carried the sport for many, 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 many years. So wrestling is definitely on the downward trend. I was not, honestly, I'm not kidding you, Brian. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, it has definitely shrunk over the years. It's still, you know, hugely popular at the high school level, and California produces some great athletes, you know, multiple state championships, champions who go on to win national titles. Sean Garrett came out of Chico High. He just title for Cornell. And so California has a strong high school, wrestling program, if you will. It's just unfortunate that it's not as widespread as other sports, across the nation.
All right, thank you very much for the call.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate it. Somebody said, I am a wrestling coach at Folsom High School. The college programs, especially on the East and West Coast for wrestling, are dying. It's still a staple of college athletics in the Midwest, but because it doesn't have any TV value or bring in ratings, it is slowly dying off. Just look at the Olympics. It's usually on at 2 or 3 in the morning, and nobody watches it except the people that are interested. Well, I understand what you're saying, and that makes a lot of sense. But when you say it doesn't have any TV value, does badminton have TV value? Does table tennis have TV value? Does, bike riding on a short track have TV value? I'm just asking. I'm not saying it does or don't. I don't think so, but I mean, you're right. You probably are right. You know a lot more about the state of wrestling than I do. But somebody said the rise of MMA has brought wrestling back worldwide. That's why you're seeing it back in the Olympics. That makes sense. I could see that, and that's why I don't like the MMA, because I'm not a wrestling guy. I just don't enjoy watching wrestling. I never really have. With maybe, again, I can remember watching the Olympics with Dan Gable and my brother, and I really got into it. But it's generally speaking, I'm not into wrestling. But believe me, I respect the people. I respect the heck out of the athletes that do wrestle, because I can't even imagine how grueling of a sport that is. All right, John Smoltz. I really had an interesting conversation with him earlier today. And when we come back, we'll hear that again. We're going to be with you right up till Oakland A's baseball. We'll talk golf in the 6 o'clock hour. Don't go anywhere. This is the Grant Napier Show on Sports 1140 KHDK. Well, it was a pleasure to be hosting the Jim Rome Show this morning. One of my guests was the Hall of Famer, John Smoltz. He's now the lead analyst on Fox's MLB coverage. Been a lot of talk about Yoenis Cespedes, and I asked John Smoltz for his thoughts on the subject.
Well, it's only a big deal if management has a problem with it. I think back in the day when I became the closer, everyone was concerned about whether or not I could do my job being the closer, not knowing when you're going to pitch. I dealt with it with the management, and my manager was great. He knew what I was capable of doing and how responsible I was. And, maybe some upper management had problem with it. And then when I saved 55 games that year, I don't think anyone ever talked about it again. This sport can consume you and can be crazy. And everyone needs a diversion. The only problem is when you're an everyday player, that's a little bit more of an issue. You're playing every day, and every once in a while, golf's not a big deal. But it sounds like, this will be more of an issue for other people because of the rate at which he plays, but this guy has been producing for him. Whenever there's an injury, I got blamed every single time that from outside people and talk radio that golf was my injury. And it never was the case. There are things you can do as a pitcher that you can't do as a pitcher that you can do as a golfer. People don't understand the component of playing golf. For a pitcher, it's a little bit more straightforward. For a position player who plays every day, it's a little bit different. So, when you're on the disabled list, most people think you should do nothing. And you're not able to play, so why should you be able to do anything else? I think that's where people are going to have more of an issue.
Yeah.
Because to swing a bat, to run a base, to do all those things that you need everything to work for a baseball player, it's not necessarily the case for a golfer.
It's
not a strenuous sport.
It is a bad look, though, don't you agree? And then the first thing, and the second thing is, do you when you played, did you find a lot of positional players played golf on game days?
No, we didn't. We did not have that back then. The days off were the only times that they could play. Now, again, this is an exception that Mets management knew going in. They were fine with it, and everything up until this point has been great. I think once you're in the heat of a battle and trying to compete, perception becomes reality, and that's where you just have to be a little bit smarter with the perception of probably not playing golf when you're on the DL, even if it doesn't make any difference to the degree of the injury, And I think that's that's probably what they'll do moving forward, is say, okay, you know, we've been fine with it up until this point. While you're in the DL, it's not a not a good decision.
We're talking with John Smoltz, the Hall of Famer lead analyst on Fox Sports, the MLB broadcast. And, of course, that means you'll see him in each and every game of the World Series. I want to talk to you about the Giants, because I'm trying to find out what is a bad stretch and what's a problem. All right. Since the All-Star break, they're 25th in runs, 23rd in OPS, 23rd in ERA. They're last in home runs allowed. They've committed 16 errors in the 18 games. The good news is they're still in first place by two games. Is this just a bad stretch, or do you think there's more to it than it?
Well, they need to get healthy, and they were playing way above their heads. I'm sure they'll never admit that when they were playing without some of their stars. That was crediting the great pitching stretch run they went on. Things do have to even out a little bit, and it looks like they have. With their additions that they've made and the fact that they're getting guys back, I think they'll be in a nice position from a strength number going head-to-head against the Dodgers. Now, they have played the Dodgers quite a bit already, so there's some games remaining. But I think the San Francisco Giants are a byproduct of every team that goes through certain times of the year where it doesn't click, you're not healthy, and you need a lot more components. So I think in the beginning of the year, I didn't think any team could come out of the West as a wild card, but that looks to be a little bit more of an issue that could arise, because the reason I felt that is because the way the Central and the East bad teams have the makeup where those teams are going to have the benefit of playing them more often. But it looks like the Dodgers so far have sustained a nice stretch, and possibly one or two of those teams from the West, you know, who don't win the division could sneak in a wild card spot.
We're talking with John Smoltz here on the Jim Rome Show. Giants and Nats tonight in Washington. They split a four-game set last weekend in San Francisco. And the Cubs right now have the best record in the National League, and they have been so good at home at 37-17. In your opinion, how important is being the number one seed in the National League? Do you think it's a big deal to have home field advantage?
Yeah, I do, especially if you're the Cubs. You know, because what they've been through and haven't established themselves in a long time, there's going to be a lot of pressure on them, but it's better to have that pressure at home, I think. I know when you have your home crowd and you've been through what they did last year, there's a big advantage. That's the reason why you want to have it. Is it the end of the world? No. But we're talking about any matchup that happens this year in the postseason in the National League is going to be a great one. Because the imbalance of teams have existed, with the exception of Colorado and their late push, which is a great story. Walt Weiss has got them kind of in the mix, if you will. Whatever series, no matter what those top 6-7 teams are, you're going to have a great opportunity to watch a great series with the Cubs having the advantage so far.
You know, and then back to the Nats, you know, they're playing so well, and it's surprising to me because Bryce Harper has been just in the worst slump. It is painful to watch this guy, but they go out and get their closer, Melanson, from Pittsburgh. Do you like the makeup of this team, or do you think it's surprising that Bryce Harper can be hitting as poorly as he is, and this team's continuing to stretch out their lead in the NL East?
Well, when you think of the Nationals, you always think, or at least you have the potential of having the MVP. Well, this year's MVP is Daniel Murphy.
Yeah.
So they just kind of replaced the MVP with the same teammate. I cannot believe they got Melanson. That's a great move. I think the Nats, with everything that went into this year, what didn't go right for him last year has gone right this year. And he's such a presence, even though he's not having the year that he did last year in Bryce Harper, he makes the team better just standing up there, because the stress level for the pitcher is making Daniel Murphy's making everybody have to suffer for whether it's walking. You know, you're creating runners on base, whether you pitch to Harper or not. Murphy has been single-handedly the difference between the Mets and the Nationals. And if you think about that, the decision to not re-sign Daniel Murphy, and then the opportunity that the Nationals were given, maybe it wasn't their first choice, but they have benefited from an interdivision player that single-handedly carried the Mets last year. And you could make the case he's single-handedly carrying the Washington Nationals, and that's the difference of the teams and the standings.
You know, I wanted to also ask you about the situation in Dallas and the Yasiel Puig. Because you played in the bigs for so long, and you were, you know, you've obviously went through a lot of different experiences. When you have a player, and again, I'm not in the Dodgers clubhouse. I'm only going by the people I've talked to and what I've heard. You know, you can use the term distraction. You can, you know, use whatever terms you want, but he's not on the team anymore. He's in the minors. When you have 24 other players in the clubhouse, when you have a player like that, what does that do to a ball club? Does it make it difficult to stay cohesive? Is it a big nuisance? Does it have to be corrected? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, some teams have overcome certain personalities because those players have been dominantly performing. When a player is not performing, then you start showing some of the warts that may exist. Yeah, look, there's a cultural difference, and there's an opportunity that he has not been given to learn the game of baseball because he's been brought up so young, had so much talent. And yes, there's some differencing of opinions when you have 25 different personalities. That's why the matrix of analytics doesn't include that or even understand what that means in a locker room. They don't understand what that continuity or the words like cohesive, it doesn't compute in their computer. So that has an opportunity to be a fraction. It has an opportunity to be a distraction. And unless you have a lot of great players overcoming that, you end up becoming a team that is, you know, kind of distracted, talking about things you wouldn't. So this has been a subject for a while. This didn't just surface. And there's been a different manager trying to treat Yasiel as well as the players differently, encouraging, positive. But from whatever has gone that led Zach Greinke to go elsewhere, for the Dodgers to have the issues they've had with their outfields and the injuries and the lack of production, this has become a point of contention. And the new management decided that they were going to handle this a little bit differently, even if it meant sending him down. That's what it seems like from me to the outside, because there's no doubting the talent level, but the understanding of the game, time, space, has just not been something that Yasiel has grasp like the learning curve of everybody else.
Miss Chin Tahoe this year. I hope that we see you back there next summer.
Yeah, the dates are back. They're back to normal. You know, I fell on the Hall of Fame, and my conscience was trying its best to determine whether or not what I should do, but ultimately I knew I was not coming to Tahoe because the Hall of Fame was something unique and special, and thankfully next year I don't have to have a tug of war with my conscience.
No, they're all good next year. I think they moved it back to All-Star Week, so I think you're all good. It's awesome.
Yes.
Hey, John, always great to talk to you. Keep up the great work, and we'll talk to you down the road. Thanks very much.
All right. You got it. Thanks for having me.
That was good stuff, John Smoltz, when I was hosting the Jim Rome Show this morning. We'll take the break. We'll come back. We're going to preview the NFC South and the Bucks with former tight end Anthony Beck. That's next.